We've been talking over these last few weeks about how in this upcoming year, there's a lot of things we could do. There's a number of things that you will do. But as Eric said, there's one thing that every single one of us has to do. And that one thing is different for every single one of us. It's, you know, maybe, you know, depending on the state of your marriage or the state of your relationships with your kids or maybe your financial position or there's a habit in your life that you're looking to change. Maybe there's a project that's just been sitting there and you're thinking, you know, I have got to get this thing completed. Whatever your one thing is, you know, we're saying we need to focus in on that. And we begin to get this picture saying, you know, if I were to make that my one thing for the year, 12 months from now, my life could be in an entirely different place. In fact, 6 months from now, my life could actually look, you know, drastically different. And so really excited that you're here today for the end of the 180 experience. And my name's Kurt, by the way. I'm what they call a pastor around here at Cross Point. We actually have one of those. I know some of you might feel like you're not in church. Or I get the question periodically, does this qualify for going to church when we laugh and, you know, watch like football videos? And, you know, sometimes we just think you got to have fun. And, you know, if you're not laughing, I don't want to go. And so, you know, that's a part of what we do. Hopefully there's a lot more to what we do as well. But today, as we wrap this series up, I really want to talk about one specific principle that I believe will apply to every single one of our lives, regardless of what your one thing is, and that has to do with the issue of time, all right, the issue of time. Now, one of the great Old Testament greats, a guy by the name of Moses, kind of gives us this great context for time, and this comes from actually from a prayer that he prayed, and we find it in Psalm 90, and about, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 months ago, I actually taught specifically on this verse. I don't want to recapture the whole teaching of that week. It was in our Live More series. If you weren't here for that, you can go on our website and download the podcast. It's free. Really encourage you to dive into that if this connects with you today. But here's what Moses said. I want to revisit the prime context. Because this relates to the whole idea of time. Here's what he said. He prayed. He said, teach us. This is Moses talking to God. He said, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom, which means teach us to live as if our days are numbered. Now, here's the thing. You and I, we don't like to talk that way, right? We're like, what are you talking about? My days aren't numbered. I mean, we don't like to think about dying. You know, the last I checked, the death rates, right around 100% or so. Everybody does it at one point or the other, all right? It's coming. I mean, at some point, you know, we're all going to be there. And so the question, you know, Moses says, hey, we need to live as if our days are numbered because they are. And as we begin to think about this, the shift in perspective with how we use and view our life, we begin to ask the question, you know, what am I doing with my time? And so I want to look at another kind of Mac Daddy verse that we find in the New Testament. Moses is in the Old Testament. This comes from the New Testament from a guy by the name of the Apostle Paul. And we're going to find this in Ephesians. So if you have a Bible, you can turn to Ephesians chapter 5. We're going to spend some time there here in a little bit. But first, I want to kind of tell you three things that you already know about time that we all just choose to ignore. All right? I mean, these are three things that, you know, listen, later in your life, 20 years from now, you're going to look back and say, man, I really wish I would implement these things in my life, these principles. These are three things that, you know, if you're married or engaged, you're thinking, man, I really want my wife or my husband or my fiance, I really want them, I hope they're listening today. If you have kids, if you have students, I want you to listen up today, all right? If you have students who aren't in the room today, take notes. You're going to go home and you're going to be like, son, listen. And you're going to write all this stuff down, hopefully, and you're going to then act like you came up with it all yourself, all right? Because that's you can do that. You have my permission. You don't need to give credit to me, all right? Because this isn't all my stuff. These are things I've learned along the way. But you're going to say, you know, and you're going to look at your notes and be like, here's what you need to know about time, all right? And it's going to be really hard for them to grasp because they're young and they think the world's never going to end. And you know, but these are key principles. And the reality is, this stuff is not new information, all right? None of you are going to walk out of here today and go, man, Kurt is brilliant. You never say that, all right? But I mean, you're definitely not going to say that today. All right, these are just, but if we can bring this concept front and center, I believe it'll make all the difference for us. All right, so three statements about time that you know, but you choose to ignore. The first one is this. There's a cumulative value to investing small amounts of time in certain activities over a long period, right? Now, that's a wordy sentence. Let me say it again. There's a cumulative value to investing small amounts of time in certain activities over a long period, meaning there are certain things that if you have small little bursts of investment, little deposits of time, in the end, there's a huge, huge payoff. All right, now, for example, case in point, all right, the one we don't want to talk about today, I'll get it right up on the table to start with, exercising, right? 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, day after day, week after week. You know, we realize that exercising is cumulative, right? I mean, one investment doesn't really create any benefits other than a sore body for a day, right? I mean, we understand there's a cumulative effect when it comes to our exercise. This is also true when it comes to school. If you're in school, you know, 20 minutes a day on every subject, when exams come in, you are prepared, all right? You're ready for those exams because you understand that studying is cumulative. It applies to spending time with your kids, all right? I mean, sometimes we're like, man, I'm just going to, you know, we fail to make the little bursts, the little deposits of time a little bit before school, you know, maybe walking in the house when we get home and realizing the mail's going to be there at midnight just like it is at 6:30, all right? I mean, it's not going anywhere. And so why don't I choose to get eyeball to eyeball with my kids, invest in them for a few minutes? What we try to do is we're like, I'm going to make up for it and do a 14-day family vacation. Don't do that. It's not a good idea, all right? If you're not seeing your kids on a regular basis, 14 days is going to go downhill quick, all right? And so it's the small little bursts of time. Same is true with your spouse, all right? It's those moments. Again, getting home from work, and instead of going right to the laptop, it's taking a few minutes to connect, eyeball to eyeball. You know, hey, how was your day? Good. How was your day? It's those small deposits of time that make all the difference because it's cumulative. Now listen, this applies to every aspect of life. It applies to every relationship. It applies to your finances. It applies to disciplining your kids. It applies if you're learning the violin or the piano or how to snow ski or, yeah, golf even. I mean, it applies to everything, that little bits of time over time have a huge payoff. Now, this is not new information, is it? You're not like, wow, Kurt is so smart. No, we know this. We get this. I mean, you know, some of us are like, okay, so if I go home today, working out for 4 hours this afternoon and saying I did it for the year isn't a good idea, right? No, we know that. We need to spread it out over time. And see, here's the thing. There's no benefit, right? There's no benefit in a single installment, right? And sometimes because of that, we're like, okay, and we bail on the small installments because there's not a benefit in a single installment, meaning if you've not been exercising, and you're here today, and you're like, man, you know, Kurt's really got me motivated. I gotta get out and exercise this week, you know? So you start tomorrow running on the treadmill, and then, you know, 30 minutes on Tuesday on the elliptical machine. I can tell you what's not gonna happen. You're not gonna walk into the office on Wednesday, and people aren't gonna be going like, wow, you are less of a person today. I mean, that would be a compliment, okay? But nobody's gonna notice. Nobody's gonna notice after two installments, because there's no benefit in a single installment. You know, for some of us, maybe over the last month, you've just re-engaged with church, maybe re-engaged with God, maybe just began relationship with Jesus. Let me tell you what, you know, you come to church and being here, you're all excited, you're like, man, I'm going to church. And I run into some of you in the grocery store, and like, you act like I have a cosmic clipboard. You're like, oh, I wasn't there this weekend. And I'm like, I had no idea, but thank you for letting me know. Now I know. All right, I mean, it's like this interesting dialogue. And but you know, listen, just being here a couple times isn't going to make an enormous difference in your life. All right? I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, obviously starting with a relationship with Jesus is a major step forward, but just through being here, what we understand is there's a cumulative effect. It's the regular building, it's the regular connecting, it's the regular learning, it's the ongoing sense of growing and God building into our lives. You know, Eric was talking a few minutes ago about small groups, about the small group list. Some of you look over that and you're like, man, I did a group in the fall, and maybe you joined a Kingdom Journey group. You've never been in a small group before. And here we are talking about it again. You're like, man, I don't get this deal. I mean, I went like 4 times, and, you know, my life's just no different. I mean, they keep hyping this thing up. Well, it's because there's cumulative value, right? A couple times doesn't really make a difference. It's community on an ongoing basis. It's this idea of connecting with people who are asking the same questions, dealing with some of the same things, walking alongside one another. All right? It might be getting up early in the morning to read scripture, to spend time in prayer. Again, it's not a once and out. There's no single benefit to the one instance. It's cumulative over time. All right? We get that. We don't always do that. So I just thought I'd tell you that. Something you know, but we don't usually live by. Here's the second thing. You know, but we often don't live by. That neglect is cumulative as well. Neglect is cumulative. And unfortunately, one of the places we, probably many of us are experiencing this, may not be in our own life, but it's through the lives of our parents. Maybe, you know, your parents neglected their health for 20, 30, maybe 40 years, and all of a sudden, it's catching up to them. And you're having to deal with that in your care for them. And here's the unique thing about neglect over time. There comes a point of no return. See, there comes a point when we've neglected long enough that you can't reclaim that which has been lost. And for some of you, you're dealing with this with your parents financially. They just didn't do the steady plotting, the steady deposits financially into investment accounts. And so here they are, you know, 30, 40 years later, and they're reaping the consequences of neglect being cumulative over time. You know, maybe it's for you academically. You know, maybe you're getting ready to graduate high school in like 6 months, you know, in June. Maybe in July now, you know. I mean, I don't know when you're going to be ending. It may be in next fall for all we know, or maybe you're getting ready to graduate college this fall and you're applying for grad school and yet your GPA isn't what you need it to be to get into the school of choice for you because you're beginning to realize that neglect is cumulative. And it wasn't that like Tuesday night you went out and partied. It wasn't that Thursday you went and played golf. It was the effects of not making the regular deposits, 20 minutes studying this subject every day, 20 minutes a year, you know, those regular deposits of time. You know, what's interesting is the same is true when I talk to people of our spiritual life. You know, a lot of times there's some moment in our lives. It might be a moment of trouble, might be a moment of tension, a moment of transition. Transitions can even be good, you know, a time when we have a new baby or make a new move into community that we're like, you know, I really need to get back on track with God and my relationship with Jesus. And so, you know, we begin to go to church. We try to begin to connect with Jesus and, you know, but we've not cracked a Bible in a while. We've not been praying in a while. And sometimes we're left feeling like, man, I just feel like God is distant. I mean, it's almost like he's not even there. And it's because, you know, you're kind of like, man, I need a remedial class. I've been asked that a few times. Do you have a remedial class for, like, Bible for Dummies? Because neglect is cumulative. It's cumulative. It accrues over time. And honestly, it's true in every aspect of relationships. Think about your relationships with your kids. My kids are between the range of 4 and 11 right now. And, you know, when they're younger, you kind of get in this mode where, you know, you're like, hey, I want you to do this because I'm dad. I just tell them, I'm the king. This is why you do it, because I said so. And, you know, and they begin to grow older, and it's like, oh, she's 10 now, and she's, you know, a good girl, and he's 11 now, and he's a good boy, and now she's 12, and she's still a good girl, and then 13 hits, and you're like, whoa, this is like a whole new ball game. Teenagers, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, just because I said so doesn't, like, work anymore, and so you need to, like, give some reason and coaching, and yet we revert back to the same old way we've always parented. Just do it, and you're like, what? I've given them a room and some music and heat over their heads. I mean, what else would they want? But you see, we've neglected the relationship. We've just kind of been a dictator, a king, which is a very clear part of the parenting process, but we've never moved and grown with them, so we've neglected the relationship, and they get to, like, 16, 17, 18 years old. I've had too many conversations to count on this level where parents says, man, Kurt, she needs help. He needs help. We need help. You know, we need a counselor. She needs to be fixed. He needs to be fixed. Everybody needs to be fixed. Why? Because there's been neglect over time. There's not been a constant building into that relationship. And unfortunately, sometimes when it comes to neglect, that you reach that point of no return. I mean, you reach that point where, you know, what's lost can't be reclaimed. And here's the unique thing. I mean, if you get nothing else out of today, I want you to wrestle with this sentence right here. Here's the sentence. The sacrifice you make to make the small deposits right now, small little bursts of time, is far smaller than the price you'll pay later for the catastrophe that comes at the end of a season of neglect. Meaning, you know, there's always sacrifice. Even the little bursts of time, it costs something, but the sacrifice is far smaller in the short little burst today and tomorrow and day after day and week after week than the catastrophe that you'll pay for at the end of a long season of neglect. I mean, that was worth, like, taking a shower for this morning, coming to church, right? I mean, that just made it all well right there. And yet the interesting thing about neglect is like, you don't have to plan for it, right? I mean, procrastinating on things, you don't have to write yourself a lipstick note on your mirror and say, you know, remember tomorrow, let this thing go again, don't do it. Right, you don't have to do those things. We naturally fall into this. In fact, nobody ever attributes their success stories to neglect. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, I've yet to talk to a couple that says, man, Kurt, we were struggling in our marriage, and we just decided to neglect each other all the way around. And would you know, 6 months later, our sex life was incredible. I mean, it just went through the roof and to the right. You know, I mean, I've never talked to a parent that said, you know, my son and my relationship is really estranged. And so we just threw in the towel. We just threw in the towel. Would you know, a year later, everything was great? That's never the story I hear. Procrastination
and neglect is never a part of the success story. You know why? Because neglect is cumulative. It's cumulative. Third observation, which you've probably thought of, all right? But I thought I'd mention it anyway. There's no cumulative value to the random things we opt for over the important things. Meaning, think of it this way. Say you were pretty good at exercising, right? So coming into Christmas, you were exercising, you know, 3-4 days a week, 30 minutes a day, and you get to Christmas holiday and you get out of the routine, and all of a sudden other things begin taking over that exercise slot. If you would add up all the piddling on Facebook that you did instead of exercising, the sleeping in for the extra hour, whatever it might be, if you would add all of those things up, you know what they would equal? Zero. Zero. Meaning those extra couple hours of sleep, or you know that time you spent on Words with Friend instead of getting out and you know and running or getting on the treadmill, whatever it would be, you know that the cumulative effect of doing this and that over the important things, usually the cumulative, you know, sum of all of that is zero. Meaning there's no cumulative value to the random things we get distracted with and that we do over the important things. I mean, it seems important at the moment. And that's why we get so deceived. That's why we end up feeling like, man, I just wasted my time. Where did the day go? Where did the vacation go? We end up in these places where like, man, I don't even know where the time went. We look at our children and it's like, man, one day I was holding her right here and there she goes down the aisle. And it's because all the time went to those random things. We opted for all the random distractions instead of the daily, the weekly, the monthly, systematic deposits of time into the things that were most important. Now that's a little disturbing, isn't it? At least it is to me. So, here's the question. All right, question is, so if you were God, all right, and you're not, by the way, all right, you're not God, but if you were God and you loved yourself the way God loves you, all right, so if you were God and you loved yourself the way God loves you, and you knew the number of days that you had left, all right, and you knew the number of days you had left, and you could look at your life, and you could see all the ways that you really used your time well and the times that you didn't use your time well, what do you think God would say to you about how you use your time? And that's a million-dollar question right there. Right? And so this is what's really cool. In Ephesians chapter 5, we find this Mac Daddy verse of time. You know, this is the Apostle Paul. This is God speaking through the Apostle Paul about time. And what's really cool about this is written like 2,000 years ago, and yet it still applies today. I mean, this thing is still as relevant today as it was 2,000 years ago. And so what we find is this God who loves you and would do anything for you, has done, he's given the full extent of what he could give for you. He understands that these small deposits of time over time into your relationships make an enormous difference. These small deposits of time, you know, in your spiritual life make an enormous difference over time. And so in these two, three verses, we find this amazing verse. And here's what Paul says in Ephesians 5. He says, be very careful then how you live. And live means life. That means like it encompasses your whole life, everything that you do, that you're doing, that you're going to do. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. And he's saying, be very thoughtful. And the Greek word right here for wise and unwise, this idea means is this idea of scoping out. It's this idea of looking ahead. He says, be very wise. Scope out what you're doing with your time. Otherwise, you're going to end up in a place that you didn't intend to be because you didn't use your time wisely. He says, be careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. And here's the statement right here. Making the most of every opportunity. Making the most of every opportunity. That phrase, making the most of every opportunity, actually means redeeming the time. If you had a different translation than the one I'm showing you here, it might even say redeeming the time. You know, this translation says make the most of every opportunity. See, there was so much energy around what Paul was saying right here. He's like, redeeming the time just seems very passive. He's like, we need to juice it up a little bit. So he says making the most of every opportunity. Now let's talk about the word redeeming for a moment. The word redeeming is actually a mathematical term. It's a mathematical word. It actually is a word used in accounting today, but even more so in the first century, which means when it comes to our time, what Paul is saying is make sure if you cash in your time, or if you trade in your time, or if you barter your time for something else, that you get something of equal or greater value. He said that's how important your time is. Whenever you have to trade it in, whenever you choose to opt for something, make sure it's of equal or greater in the trade-in value. He says, be very careful. Make sure every day, every hour, every day, every week, redeem the time. Make the most of every opportunity. And then listen, here's what he says next. Here's the reason. He says, because the days are evil. In other words, what he's saying right there, he's saying if you were to just pick up your feet and let the current of culture just take you, you would go with the flow of the world, you will not redeem your time. You will actually waste your time. You'll end up somewhere in your 30s, somewhere in your 40s, somewhere in your 50s or your 60s that you don't intend to be, and you will have wasted your time just because you let the current of life take you there. He says, be careful, because the days in which you and I live are evil. And he says this, he says the main reason is because the culture, the flow of life, motivates you to be distracted by things that aren't really important. And I think back on my week, I think, how many times was I distracted this week by things that weren't really important? And this might sound a little freaky to you, okay? But what the Bible teaches is that there is actually a wave of sin, a wave, a force of sin that actually rolls through time with us. It's this wave of sin that it's kind of this gravitational pull that's the reason that we get distracted and we actually procrastinate. It's the reason that we actually wake up in the morning and say, you know, I ought to do this today, and then we don't do it. It's the reason we're thinking, man, I'd be a lot better off if I actually took care of this, and then we don't take care of it. It's the reason we listen to a message like this, like, man, I need to get out and get after some things, and we at home, then we don't follow through, because there's this wave of sin, this gravitational pull that causes us to be distracted by the things that aren't important. I mean, why in the world would we hurt ourselves? Why in the world would we, like, consciously know and allow ourselves to do this? Paul says, let me give you a summary statement. He says right here, because the days are evil. And then he goes on, and he gives a conclusion. Listen, this is not new information, is it? You're like, okay, Kurt, let's get on with it. This is not new, but listen, this is an application moment. He goes on, he says, therefore, do not be foolish. All right? So remember, this is Paul telling you this, not me. This isn't Kurt calling you foolish. What Paul's saying is whenever you know you ought to do something, but you don't do it, whenever you know, man, this would make my life better, but I go out and choose to do something else, you know what Paul says? New Testament, Old Testament alike, he said, that's the biblical definition of a fool. When you know something is good for you, and yet you choose to not do it. You're like, yeah, I really ought to do that thing, but I think I'm going to pass. He says, that's a fool. You're like, yeah, I read that side of that carton said if you smoke these, you're going to die, but man, I just don't believe everything I read. You know, you're like, he's like, that's a fool. All right? You know, you're like, you know, somebody gave me a marriage book because they said, you know, neglect is not a marriage strategy, and they thought if I read the book, it might help me in my marriage, you know, and I don't know, I never read the book. And Paul says, that's being a fool, all right? He says, if you know there's something you ought to do, but you don't do it, he says, that's the definition of what it means to be a fool. And then he goes on. He says, but understand. And understand means to acknowledge or to face up. He says, understand what the Lord's will is. Well, I love this phrase right here, and I've asked them to bold this phrase so we can focus in on it here. Understand what the Lord's will is. Now, I don't know where we are, probably all over the board when it comes to the Lord's will. For some of us, we're new in here for the first time. You're like, I didn't even know God had a will for my life. For those who have been in the church for a long time, you might know God's will for your life or think it's one single thing. For some of you who have been in the church for your whole life, you're all screwed up on God's will. You're thinking you got to find the right key to unlock the right lock so that you know what God's will is for you, and it's this eternal destiny to find it. You know, and so we get all hung up on this. Here's the thing. God has a will for your life. God has a will for every single one of our lives. New Testament, Old Testament alike, God has a will. Let me tell you what God's will for your life is. Here's what it is. It's that one thing that when I mentioned it today, whatever that thing was, you sat back and you're like, oh yeah, I really should do that. And you're like, oh no, that's my conscience, Kurt. That's not God's will. No, see, your conscience is God's megaphone, all right? God speaks to you through your conscience. So, you know, if when I said, you need to leave work early so you can get home and get eyeball to eyeball with your family over dinner every night, make those small deposits, you're like, you know, that'd be a good thing. I'm telling you, that's probably God's will for you right now. That's one of the things God's desires or wills for you in your life. If every time I've mentioned Facebook or words with friends, you're like, yeah, I probably spent a little too much time on there. I'm guessing that's God saying to you, focus on the people in front of you instead of always being down on your phone. That's God's will for you. All right? And here's the implication. See, some of us haven't made this connect because here's the deal. Anything that relates to your time is a spiritual issue because your time is your life. So anything that relates to your time is a spiritual issue. Your time is a gift. And what we know is small deposits of time over time is how you redeem your time. It's how you redeem your relationships. It's how you redeem your finances. It's how you redeem a habit you're trying to break. It's how you redeem a relationship with your kids. Small deposits over time. So here's the question. Nobody wants me to ask, all right? We've got to land this somewhere. So here's the question, all right? And you can go ahead and take out your connection cards if you want. Eric had you fill these out. Every week we do a kind of a next step at the end of our teaching, because, you know, it's not about just coming in here and getting motivated a little bit or saying, okay, here's what I need to do. But it's about saying, okay, what do I do? How do I actually get active? Not just say I want to do something, but how do I actually do it, as that song said a few minutes ago. All right, so here's the question. What do you need to begin? What do you need to do to begin? What do you need to begin again? What do you need to continue doing? You know, as you think about your life, as those things popped into your mind as I've been talking here this morning, what in your life have you neglected? And you thought, you know, I need to put some deposits into that area of life. You know, where do you need to make those constant deposits? What discipline in your life have you gotten away from that you need to begin again? All right, what's God moved you? What's God's will for you? Whatever those things are, he's put on the front of your mind. Where do I need to make those little deposits of time? And then the second question is, what's standing in the way of doing this? That's always the second question. Why am I not doing this to start with? What's standing in the way of you treating your body in a much better way and getting the sleep you need or the exercise you need? You know, what's standing in the way of you actually investing little bursts of time into your kids, into your spouse? What's the thing that's standing in the way? And I know for some of us, you're sitting here thinking, well, Kurt, I can tell you what it is, man. It's this big word. I don't have this discipline bone in my body. I was born without one. I don't know discipline. Well, here's the really cool thing. All right, the Bible actually talks about the discipline bone. You didn't know it was a bone. It's in the Bible. It's just called something different. It's called self-control. Talks about self-control. And this might be one of the greatest arguments for some of us to begin a relationship with Jesus. Because what the Bible teaches is when we begin a relationship with Jesus and we receive his grace and enter into relationship with him, and this gets a little freaky. It's not really freaky. It says God's Spirit manifests itself in us. And one of the manifestations of the Spirit is self-control. It's something that God begins to give us strength in, the ability to have in a way that we can't do in and of ourselves. And so maybe that's your issue. Is we need to, maybe we've never prayed about exercising more regularly. Maybe we've never prayed about our diet and being able to maintain a healthy eating style. Maybe we've never prayed about our financial condition other than, God, just give me money. But we've never said, God, help me to make the steady, ongoing steps over time. See, God actually wants to build into you. And he says his Spirit will give us the self-control to bring about the change. And of course, the last question is, what are we going to do about it? And that's where our next steps come into play. Because you see, we all have a place where we come to and we have to decide, am I going to continue doing what I'm doing, or am I going to take the step, whatever that is, something different for all of us, to go to the next new place? And here's what I know about every single one of our lives. Here's what I know. Your life is perfectly designed for the results you're experiencing. So whatever you're experiencing right now, your life is perfectly designed for that. If we want to end up someplace else, we have to change the system. We have to change our behaviors. We have to change our patterns. And so I'm trusting God's kind of prompting you and maybe laying something on your heart that you're going to fill in here, you're going to mark on this. So I want to give you just a moment to do that, and then I'm going to pray for it. So take a moment and go ahead and declare, identify, say, God, this is a spiritual decision right here. What am I going to do? How am I going to begin something, continue something, whatever that is, God's will is for my life. All right, let's pray. God, man, this is not a complicated issue right here, and yet, man, we struggle with this. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because, as the scripture says, that we live in an evil day, and there's just this rolling wave of sin that causes us to get distracted, causes us to do things that we say, man, I really need to take the step or do this thing, and we get distracted with other things that maybe just aren't as important. And God, as I've been reading from your word, your inspired word through the Apostle Paul today, I know there's certain things that have come to every single one of our hearts. There's things that have been prompted in our minds that we need to get after this week. And I would even say for those of us who aren't even sure we agree with who you are or believe that Jesus is who he says he is, maybe we're not sure about the whole church thing. What's unique is there's probably things that have even been placed on your heart as well. And so, God, I just ask that this week you give us the courage. I mean, we're almost to the end of the month of January, this season, when we think about where do I want my life to be 12 months from now? And, God, we can make a decision in these moments and invite you into that. Invite your spirit to manifest itself within us. That we can get a handle on our exercise or on our finances or on a relationship that needs to be redeemed with our kids or our marriage that needs to be redeemed, needs a fresh start. And it all begins with small deposits of time over time. God, there's probably some of us here today who have never taken that first step of beginning relationship with you. And that's really the first step if we want any change that's going to last. So if that's where you are today, you just in your own words, say to Jesus, Jesus, I want to know you. I want to begin to follow you. I want to receive your grace because I've been rolling this wave of sin. It's distracted me. It's got me caught up in all kinds of stuff, whatever it might be, things that seem normal, but I can tell that it's my life's not where I want it to be. Would you please come in and forgive me of that? And would your spirit begin to guide me and to lead me? God, one of the cool things is it doesn't matter where we are spiritually. It doesn't matter what our spiritual background is, that there's no space that your love cannot reach. There's no place in our hearts, in our lives, in our financial pictures that your peace cannot be experienced. I just pray that you would make that so in these next minutes.